You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
You're listening to Unlikable Female Characters, the podcast featuring feminist thriller writers in conversation about women who don't give a damn if you like them. I'm Kristen LaBianca, and I am thrilled to be here today talking with Lori Rader Day. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Kristen.
Yeah, we're so glad to have you. We've been talking about having you on for like a while, and it's finally worked out. So it's exciting.
It's exciting for me. I wonder if I should be flattered that you've wanted me to be on Unlikable well, Female Characters for so very long.
Well, you know, I think we're reclaiming the word unlikable. So often when I like describe this podcast to people, they go like, I love reading about unlikable female characters. And then they kind of pause and they're like, I think I am one. And I'm like, yeah, you're welcome. This is where it is.
I love it. Very happy to be here.
Yes. Well, we are super excited to talk about The Lucky One, which is amazing. I just finished it over the weekend.
Thank you.
It's fantastic.
You want me to like you. I can see how this is
going. Yeah, I want you to like me. I don't care if anybody likes
I already
you.
Do.
Great. So yeah, we're going to talk about your new book, which came out in February, and we're going to talk about it through the lens of the unlikable female archetypes that we are exploring this year on the podcast. And this one that is a perfect fit for your book is The Woman Who Just Won't Let It Go.
I love it.
And I kind of think that the entire like genre of female driven suspense falls into this category of the woman who won't let it go. Like, it's kind of like the archetype actually defines the genre, right? Like,
I was thinking that when you suggested this this archetype, I was thinking, how do you narrow that down? That seems like all the characters I love, all the books that I love, they just won't let it go.
Right. So I think kind of the motto of the team of this archetype is like, be careful what you wish for because you just might get it, right? Like
exactly.
They want to find out the truth, but like in the end, they don't like the truth. And that's kind of the whole heart of this book.
Absolutely. I think, you know, they won't let it go. They have to have the truth, but then usually the truth is hidden for a good reason. You know, it's going to be messy.
It's very true. Secrets don't stay secrets for like no reason. Of course, like there's always a reason that people feel compelled to bury things, right? So digging up things that have been intentionally buried is like automatically a messy proposition.
There's going to be some mess. Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely some mess. So tell us a little bit about the book.
The Lucky One is about Alice Fine, who was kidnapped as a child. She was very young, about 3 years old, but she remembers a little bit of it, and it's sort of like this family story. She feels like she is the lucky one. She was only gone for, you know, a few hours, and then she was returned safely to her family, and her dad, who was a police officer, saved her. So it's part of the family lore. But she feels like she sort of, you know, dodged a bullet there. So in her adult life, 30 years later, she has been being a like low-level volunteer for a website called the Doe Pages, where there are cold case missing persons on part of the site, and then also cold case unidentified remains. And this is actually a website that's based on the Doe Network, which is a real website with real life amateur sleuths doing this kind of matching between missing and unidentified people. Mm. And then one day on the site, she sees a face she recognizes, and it's the man who kidnapped her, who was never brought to justice. So she decides she's going to start digging into that to see what's happened, why is he still out there, and can she bring him to justice? Sort of, you know, thinking she doesn't want anyone else to be hurt by him, but also to go back to today's topic, you know, she wants a little bit of justice for herself, I think, too. And then along the way, she meets Marilee Cruz, who is also telling part of the story, who has some issues of her own, and they sort of go about this digging process, not together, usually against each other, but they sort of become a bit of a team as well.
Yes. So the man that Alice sees on the site, the man who took her, Marilee knows him. She knows him as a guy that her mom dated a long time ago. And so they are both approaching the mystery of this man from very different places. And I think that they are very different people. They are both driven by the same impulse to get to the bottom of it. But Alice is a very sort of sheltered and timid person in the beginning of the book because of the life experiences that she's had and sort of being the person who this crazy thing could have happened to, and it did, but also it didn't end badly. So she's just like, she's kind of very withdrawn into herself. She's really in a kind of bubble that's been created by her family. So she's like, she's not super street smart, I would say. And Marilee is really like the opposite of that in every way.
And she's going about it from a place of he was a good person to her. And so, right. Yeah, she's just got a very different perspective on things. And that's where they clash.
Yes, and clash they do.
That's the most fun to write.
Oh, I bet. So, like, why do you think, like, what drives Alice to volunteer with the Doe Pages in the first place? Because she's kind of incurious about her own life mm-hmm. up until, you know, the story starts. Like, as a reader, like, there's stuff that's like, that doesn't really add up. You'd think she might have wondered, but like, she hasn't. She hasn't questioned, like, the story, that her origin story as a person, really. Like, that's what happened. And yet she has this drive to, like, look into other cases. What is behind that contrast?
Yeah. I think you're right. She is, and she admits that she's very incurious about her own story and the story she's been told. She just accepts it. I mean, I think we kind of all do that. You know, these family stories, that's just how it happened. We don't think anything could be amiss. But I think she is driven partly in, she says that she's driven by this sort of, you know, I got away. I maybe know a little bit more about this than anyone else who can, you know, there aren't very many people who got away who can tell this story. Right. And so maybe I can help. But I think she's also driven by other things that she would not admit to. You know, there's a certain pride in having been the person who has lived through this. And it's sort of a little bit of a minor celebrity mm-hmm. in a way. Although she doesn't really talk about it on the site. She talks about it once and then immediately withdraws that comment and sort of disappears herself because she didn't realize how much attention that would bring. Like, she wanted the attention, but then she didn't understand how much attention she was going to get. And that's not much of a spoiler. It happens in the very first few pages of the story. So I think she's driven by, you know, the altruism that she sort of says that she's driven by, but also these other darker things that she might admit to herself in a very, very dark moment.
Mm-hmm. And there's also probably an element of, like, on the surface, she believes the story that everyone knows about what happened to her, but maybe part of it is that deep, deep down, she doesn't necessarily, or she's wondered.
Yeah, she's got a lot of unanswered questions about her life. Her mother has died about 2 years before the story starts. And I think her mother was ill for a lot of her life. And so she's got a lot of, I don't know if questions is the right word. She sort of has some unfinished feelings about that. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's sort of, you know, while her mother was alive, there was too much going on to distract her from any deeper questions about what has happened to her.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about the two women that Alice kind of works with from the Dough Pages, Lillian and Juby.
Do you love them? I love them.
I love them so much. They're so much fun. they like work so well together as characters. Tell us a little bit about those.
Lillian and Juby are volunteers for the Dough Pages. They're real volunteers. When I talk about Alice being a volunteer, she's just doing some really low level, almost, you know, just website maintenance stuff. She hasn't really dipped her toe in too much. But then you have Lillian and Juby. Lillian is an old school, older woman who, you know, they have jobs, they work together. And so Lillian, who's a longtime volunteer for the Dough Pages, gets Juby involved. And then they're sort of like this little team. Even though they're completely different in character, in age, in background. But I really like them together. One of my editors suggested that they were too weird at one point, and I said, I love them weird. I love them weird. I mean, and I think when you think about the kind of people who might have a lot of time to spend on online sleuthing, I mean, these are people who they're introverts. They like to do things by themselves. Maybe they've got some friends. Of course they have some friends, but they really like to be by themselves.
Yeah, people who are that involved with a community like this, like they're not going to like read as super normal from first glance.
Well, right? and when you think about this real online community, I think, you know, they're going to read. It's a weird thing to try to write about this online community, which is one of the barriers that I ran up against very quickly, is that mostly the real people who do this work, the tireless work, the thankless work, usually, they're mostly doing it by themselves. But I wanted to get these characters in one place and let them interact. And yeah, I love Lillian and Juby. I had so much fun writing them.
Yeah, I can tell. They're really fun on the page, and they make a really good team. Like, you know, unlikely as a team they may be, they work well together. They understand each other, and it's cool that they kind of approach things from a different angle, but it's like in the service of the same goal.
It's interesting though, because I feel like they're likable, but each individually, if you describe them, if you talked about how they were, they would also be unlikable, but I like them. I like them weird and sort of gruff with each other and arguing at, you know, in the car in the back seat.
Right, like bickering, like, yeah, like it's a lot of fun. I think we talk a lot on this podcast about how the word unlikable ultimately has nothing to do with whether or not someone is actually personally likable. It's sort of like a collection of characteristics that society in general would describe as difficult, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So like someone might be perfectly pleasant to talk to for a few minutes. That doesn't mean they still can't be an unlikable female character, for sure, because, you know, they're like, you know, ambitious or determined to the point of obnoxiousness or nosy. Like, all of these things are kind of characteristics that society, by which I mean the patriarchy, has decided like these are characteristics that women have and we don't like them. So you know,
because like take up too much space,
right? Exactly. So like the idea of a woman who just won't let it go, she's pushing towards this conclusion, she just won't drop it, like that's not something that you would say about a man. You wouldn't say, oh, that guy just won't let it go.
Exactly.
Like, he's a man thinks that he's entitled to do whatever he wants. It's not a matter of, is that his story to look into or not? Like, it's just, it's totally different for women.
He's ambitious. He's a go-getter.
Exactly. Right. Like, the go-getter versus the woman who won't let it go. Like, is there a difference? There's not really a difference.
No.
And there's also, you know, elements of relying on intuition that go into what these characters are kind of working through. Like, Alice knows something isn't right. Marilee knows something isn't right. Like, the story of this guy that she grew up with in her life in a very sort of transient way, she knows there's more to the story, even though her mother is saying, no, there's no more to it. That's it. She knows deep down. And intuition is hugely important for suspense novels, but it's also one of those words that gets lumped in with like, oh, the lady's intuition.
I mean, whatever. This is how we get called witches.
Exactly.
Kristen.
Gotta be careful claiming we've got intuition. Labeled was hysterical.
Somebody's lighting a match right now.
Right. Exactly. You hear that hush that just fell over the airwaves? That was my seance. But yeah, it's like these types of characters are really fun to write about and read about, I think, because like we are all these people in some way or another in our lives. Like, I think everyone can relate to the idea of the woman who just can't let it go. Like, we've all got that something. Usually it's not as dramatic as Alice and Merrily's situation, but we've all got something like that.
I agree. I mean, I think you could say that there's this archetype in my writing, book from book from book. They are all standalones, but I really love the woman who has sort of like narrowed down her life to the point where she doesn't have that much. Mm-hmm. And so then when there's something to pursue that might actually change her life, she does pursue it despite her own, I don't know, her own reservations. They're usually very reluctant sleuths. Yeah. I cannot come up with, I mean, I should just write a PI like you do so that I could be like, okay, this is her job. she has to go looking for, you know, they're very reluctant.
Well, I mean, as you probably know, Roxanne finds all kinds of reasons to put off looking into what she really needs to look into.
I mean, Roxanne and I really, you know, I connect with Roxanne in this way. Absolutely.
Yeah. But there is like the idea of like the reluctant sleuth, like she's reluctant to get into it, but then once she is into it, like she can't stop it. It takes on almost like a force of its own. Really.
Yeah, it's like it becomes like an obsession. This is the thing that she has, and she might actually figure it out if she spends the time.
Right, right. Tell me a little bit about the research that you did while writing this book.
So I did a lot of research about the real website, the Doe Network. I interviewed one of the founders, Todd Matthews. He is a guy who sort of came into this like online sleuthing very early. This is online as in, you know, chat rooms way back in the day. But he was even involved in it even earlier than there was an internet, because his father-in-law, back before he even met this guy's daughter, his wife, in high school, found a body in Kentucky wrapped up in a tent. Mm. And the father-in-law tried to figure out who she was and could not. And then eventually she was buried in Kentucky without a name. They called her Tent Girl just to have, you know, something to call her. Wow. And 30 years after that body was found, Todd Matthews solved that case through. Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's crazy. These cases are crazy. 30 years cold case solved when one of the chat rooms, I think he was talking in, he was like sifting through messages of people who had lost loved ones or, you know, lost track of loved ones. And he found a woman saying, I haven't heard from my sister in this long. This is where she was last seen. This is, these are the things I know I can tell you about her. And he just had this feeling. There was something about her post that he thought this is her. So, I did research, you know, from that real life, amateur sleuth angle. But then I also did a little bit of research myself, thinking, well, if you wanted to be an online sleuth, if you had this unidentified body or this missing person and you wanted to start to learn about them, what would you do? So I went to my hometown library and I looked up a missing persons case that I knew about from when I was a kid. It was a girl that I had been on the school bus with. I knew her a little bit. I shouldn't have known her. She was 4 years older than me, but she was a bit of an outcast, I think, from her own age group. And so I sat next to her on the bus at least a couple of times. So she went missing when she was 12 years old from our neighborhood, about 9 houses away from me.
Oh, wow.
And it was, of course, a huge deal in our neighborhood. Our mothers all got very nervous. But she was, as I learned from doing the research, you know, in the old newspaper archives, she was considered a runaway. And somebody who might have been pregnant at 12. So her going missing was not even reported in the newspaper. As far as I could see, I looked pretty carefully and did not see any mention of her going missing. I mean, it was, you know, investigated, but a runaway. But then a couple years later, her older sister was found murdered in our area out in the country between where I lived and where my grandparents lived. And in fact, my grandfather was one of the first people on the scene. And I have written about this a couple of times in the past. And I finally had to go look and see, okay, what are the facts of this case? I only remember a little bit of the, you know, the whispers and the rumor, what was actually reported, what was known and when.
Right.
And when the second sister was found shot and raped, suddenly everyone thought, I wonder if her sister actually was a runaway.
Right.
And of course she was not. But she's never been found. Her body has never been recovered. So she still appears on the Doe Network and other missing persons site. So when I was looking at that site early days, I was skimming around looking in Indiana and Illinois, the places that I have lived and do live, and I saw her face and I recognized it immediately. I hadn't forgotten about her, but I was definitely not expecting to see her face when I was researching this book.
Right. Oh, that must have been really chilling.
It was pretty, I was expecting, there was a little girl who went missing from another town in Indiana, and I knew I would see her because she was never found, a much younger girl than I was, somebody that went to school with my sister. But I was not expecting to see this other girl. I sort of thought, oh, surely they hadn't found her. She's still missing.
It's interesting that, like, a story about these women who can't let it go comes out of such an old case. And I think it's really true of any novel that's about a cold case. It's like, at some point, like when this originally happened, someone very much could let it go, right? Like, and it's not even always because there was nothing to look into. Like, there are lots of reasons why police or family or whatever may not have been able to figure out what was behind what happened. But like, these types of stories in fiction and in real life, like, it happens and then it doesn't really get forgotten about, but it gets sort of buried under the years and everything is just kind of like laying there waiting intact. So when you're talking about a novel about one of these cases, like, it's an interesting challenge because there are definitely clues to be found because no one was actively hiding them from you, you know, 30 years ago or whatever. So there are clues to be found if you know where to look. And I think that's kind of what makes it fun as a reader, because it's different from like a murder that happened 6 months ago. If you're trying to solve a case like that, like, that's a very different type of approach.
Absolutely. One of the things that was tricky, you know, just craft-wise writing this book was, how do normal people get information about old cases? I mean, right. You write a PI, you know what I'm talking about, where, yes, you're like, oh, my amateur sleuth, how does she actually get information? And I was trying to figure out, okay, where do you even start? And then where would you go from there? But a 30-year cold case, or in this case, yeah, it was about 30 years. There ends up being quite a few sort of cases that are all sort of tied together, not to ruin the book for anybody, but that was the trickiest part, was where does this information go? Where can you find all the clues you need? And then, you know, it's a paper trail, and a paper trail in a book is really not that interesting. So I skimmed over that real fast. Here's a bunch of paper. She looks through it. Okay.
Here's 60 pages of her reading papers. Like, no, that's not what anyone wants to read.
No.
That is kind of a unique challenge of being a writer, because a lot of like the detail stuff of the way a person would investigate a crime is like paperwork or just like reading documents.
I mean, we're talking about online sleuths. I'm right. Like, I gotta get them off the computer. Yes. It's just not that interesting.
No. Lillian and Juby would not have worked at all if they had just existed only in the Doe pages. Like, it's necessary for them to like become a part of Alice's real life too.
Absolutely.
Very much so.
I talked to Todd Matthews when I was interviewing him. I said, I'm going to have to get these people together. And he's like, he still works in this area. And he also consults with TV shows and movies where they want to have this kind of community. And he consulted on a TV show. And he's like, they didn't, I told them we have to get these people together in a room, and they're like, no, we want to make it real. And he's like, yeah, but real is they're all on their computers at home. It's just,
it's just I did like the sound of typing. Like, that's it.
Yes. But it did give me a chance to do a little bit of like having the chat, you know, the chat function within the website, having them talking to each other and then having some fun with the trollish behavior that always crops up when you're online somewhere, which right. is kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't have any conversation on the internet these days without there being a troll of some kind. So that is a nice realistic touch.
I mean, this is the, you know, insider group, and they're still trolling each other.
Right. So. Right. Right. Have you ever tried to like investigate one of these cases yourself?
So when I was doing the research of, you know, these two sisters, I really got that feeling of I could definitely become obsessed with this. It just got really, this really strange feeling of this sister, this woman, you know, this little girl, she was only 12, you know, she never got any older, is still out there somewhere. She's definitely not alive. That is just not a thing that is at all possible.
Right.
But, and it won't be solved until someone finds her body.
Right.
Yeah, they do know what happened, by the way, if anyone's curious.
Oh, they do?
Yeah, so the second sister was raped. They had DNA of her assailant, but they could not compel the best suspect they had to give DNA until he died. And so their stepfather was definitely at least the second sister's rapist and probably her murderer. When he died, they were able to get his DNA and matched it. But that second sister, the little girl I knew, you know, her body is out there somewhere. And it just, yeah, I can feel how people can get obsessed with this kind of story and not right. be able to let it go. Yeah. I have to move on to the next book, but
yeah,
but it's hard. Yeah, there's a lot that's still there that I could really sink my teeth into if I knew how to do this better, or could, you know, dig up every field in central Indiana.
Right. Which would be a simple task, surely.
Simple. Yeah. Simple. There's just a couple of fields in central
right,
Indiana.
Just a few. Yeah. Not a whole state of fields or anything. I totally can see how people could get obsessed. Like, even just like I can see how I would become obsessed just researching the website for a book. I mean, like,
mm-hmm.
I once long ago had a PlayStation 2 and the game Need for Speed, and I became so obsessed with playing that game and I could not stop myself. Like, I had to get rid of the machine. Like, so wow. I have a very real problem becoming deeply obsessed with things. So it's like I can definitely relate to that.
We're just like characters where the thing that, you know, it's a problem for you, but it could actually make you really good at something else.
Yes.
Exactly. So what makes you really like obsessed about this video game makes you an excellent author, like right. really dedicated to getting the story right and all the details in yeah. place.
Yeah, it's kind yeah. of funny how that works out. Do you ever like struggle with the fact that like we write books about horrible things that happen to made up people, but like horrible things happen to real people and it's not entertainment?
Yeah, I do struggle with that. And I think this book especially, that's one of the reasons why I really wanted to have this like on the ground research so that I had some sort of touchstone to go back to and remind myself. My third book, The Day I Died, also had some relevancy to that. So it has some domestic violence issues in it. And I have never been the victim of domestic violence, but someone that I went to high school with was actually murdered by her ex-boyfriend. Mm. She had a restraining order. She did everything right, but he came with a gun and killed her anyway. What I was doing was remembering her as I was writing that book, always trying to remember, even if my character got away, and she does, like the book starts when she's already escaped from this kind of past, not everybody gets away.
Right.
And I think that's, I don't know, I feel like that's the least I can do is remember that real people do suffer these fates and sometimes don't get away victoriously with a romantic entanglement at the end.
Right.
You know, we have to write the books that we write, but I think it's better if we just remember real people do suffer some of these things.
Yeah, and I think we have to like approach it as the stories that we're telling are revealing very real facts about human nature. Mm-hmm. And not that like I'm doing the Lord's work with my, you know, two series or any such thing.
No, you are. You are.
Like, you know, if writing a story like that, like even gives like one single person a thought to make them think a little deeper about real people, I mean, that's like, that is not nothing, right?
I think it's, you know, it's what we can do. This mm-hmm. is the thing that I can do. I can tell stories with a little bit of social justice going on. Right. And maybe people think about it for, you know, a few minutes today where they wouldn't have normally.
Exactly. Yeah.
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 And each of the books has had something like that. I didn't start out thinking, I'm going to save the world through fiction.
Right.
That is not what I was trying to do. I wrote the first full draft of my first book, the first published book, The Black Hour. And after the first draft was written, I thought, oh, this is about socioeconomic disparity. Oh, I didn't realize that, huh? Mm-hmm. And then went back and, you know, revised with that in mind. And then the next book had, you know, sexual trafficking, and the third book had domestic violence, and the fourth book had PTSD of an army vet. You know, it just kept going. And it's not really like I'm like, I've got to figure out what I'm talking about in this book. I don't set out to do this, but I don't know, there's usually something going on besides, of course, you know, murder mystery. Right. It just, I don't know if it makes it interesting for me or if it's me trying to figure out what these characters are really going through, and it's usually something deeper than I meant.
Yeah, there's always like, there's the story under the story, which is so fun, I think, as a writer, because you can write a mystery or a thriller or a suspense novel in a way that can be enjoyed on a very superficial level if that's what a reader desires. Mm-hmm. But there's like always more to dig into if you know, are really reading between the lines and taking in all of the characterization. And that's the part that gets me so excited as a writer.
I love it as a reader when I read, you know, your books and other books where they sort of engage with things that I wasn't, it's not on the back cover. It's not going to be something that we talk about. It's just, it's there and it's layered in and it's something to chew on other than a great story. And that's what I love as a reader.
Yeah, it's really good. What led you to want to write suspense and thrillers?
You know, most of my career decisions have been made for me, or I sort of backed into them. I had to be told I was writing a novel the first time that I started writing a short story that got really long. And then not that long after that, I had a chance to show it to there was a fellowship program that I got invited into. And when I arrived, I was put into the mystery group. And that was a bit of a surprise to me because I had not been writing a mystery as far as I knew. And the teacher of that said, oh, well, there's a crime in your first 15 pages. Kind of like, how did you not notice that, kid? Are you going to solve it? And I said, I don't know. I just found out it was a novel last week. I can't say that I chose suspense or chose mystery or crime. In some ways, they chose me. Right, but I think it's probably because I was, you know, as a young reader, I was definitely drawn to these darker stories. Lois Duncan was an early favorite. Mm. Agatha Christie, Mary Higgins Clark, rest in peace, yes. Mary Higgins Clark. Were some of my earliest favorites. You know, the first time I picked up a book that was just a book for an adult, not a kid, were these really dark stories that had a lot going on. So yeah, I think that was just me trying to put some words together, and what do you know, here come the stories of my childhood.
Yeah, same for me. Like I really like grew up reading darker stories, and I like at the time I wouldn't have even been able to like articulate it as I like to read dark stories because I'm a weird kid, but like in retrospect that is what was happening.
100%.
Yeah.
I was a dark kid. I was definitely a dark kid. Yeah, you can ask my mom about that one. I took her to the library to look up murders.
Right yeah, it's so funny
as an adult, obviously, but
right.
She wasn't surprised.
Yeah. A couple months ago, I actually I asked my mom if I could borrow her stack of Mary Higgins Clark paperbacks. I wanted to take some photos for a presentation that I was doing. So I wanted to like take pictures of all of these, like, you know, 80s and early 90s paperbacks that I had been reading. And so she said, okay, she would bring them to me. And then the next text was a picture of this, like, this weird kind of falling apart hardback blue police investigation handbook. And her text message says, why do I have this? And it's like, you have that because you are the mother of a mystery writer.
And it's really well worn because I have looked through it much.
Exactly.
For many years.
Yes. It's like probably something that like I got at a yard sale when I was a child or something. Like,
I mean, you're just lucky that your mom was like, oh, yeah, you can have that for a nickel for sure.
It might have been my own nickel. Who knows?
Okay. Well, I mean, for your own nickel, but still, like, I don't know. I think some parents would be like, no, not even for a nickel. Can you bring that into the house?
Yeah, I mean, that probably would have been a valid concern, but I guess I turned out all right. So we'll just,
I mean, pretend that that's for sure. I mean, we're still weird kids, but
yes.
In adulthood, nobody cares anymore.
Right, which is like the great part about adulthood, right?
It does get better, but this is how.
Yes. It's not like you get less weird. It just becomes like no one cares. So
nobody cares, or you realize everybody else is really weird too, and you find the people who are weird just like you.
Yes.
And yeah, and you get to hang out
alone. It's great.
And then they have podcasts so you can hang out.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So kids listening out there, when you grow up, you're going to find your fellow murder mystery podcasters.
You don't have to be normal.
No, it's okay.
Just start a podcast about whatever it is, kids.
Right. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm so excited for our listeners to read The Lucky One because it's really, really wonderful. So suspenseful. And the women just totally leap off the page.
Thank you so much.
And keep writing awesome books.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And you keep writing awesome books. I can't wait for your next one.
Oh, thank you.
And I want to see more of Roxanne. I demand. I demand more Roxanne.
Yes, I am going to do my best to make that happen for sure.
The people have spoken.
The people want what they want.
They want what they want.
I will pass that feedback along to my
publisher. All right. Thank you.
That's it for this episode of Unlikable Female Characters. Don't forget to subscribe, and you can also follow us on Twitter at UnlikableFCPod for updates, book recommendations, and angry feminist rants. Our website is unlikablefemalecharacters.com, and we're also on Instagram at UnlikableFemaleCharacters. Thanks for listening.